Hi, this is Cass. Welcome to the Curio Podcast, where two old friends hash out current events, politics, and whatever strikes our fancy. Visit us on Twitter at Podcast Curio. Join our Facebook page. Check out our website, curiopodcast.org. And don't forget to subscribe. Thanks for listening. Hi, Kimmy.
Hey, Cass.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm doing better.
Cass has been sick, you guys.
I had the bad cold. I couldn't even talk. It sounded like this. And so now I'm having the, like, leftover remnants, the night coughing, the post-nasal drip still. So I might still sound like I'm not all the way well, but I'm, like, 98% better than I was, so...
You're in that space where you feel better mostly and the remnants are making you crazy, like...
Well, I'm a little tired, you know, like I did too much this morning, like planting and potterying, and then like had to take a nap.
Yeah.
For an hour, yeah.
Yeah.
But also I got up at 5 a.m. because my body thought it was 8 a.m. because I was in Boston for a few days, so I woke up at 5 a.m. like, ping, time to drink the coffee!
Right. But wait, it's still kind of dark outside.
I like it, though. There's an extra quietness to the darkness in the morning. I like it.
Yeah, I like early morning, too, but I rarely make it. Yeah. Because I also like late night.
Me, too. I also like sleeping.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't get a lot of it, but once I'm asleep, I like to stay there.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I like the late nights. Like, if I'm in bed before 2 a.m.
Wow, that's really late.
Yeah.
Dang.
If I'm in bed before 2 a.m., I'm like proud of myself. Like, oh, you did it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, 1 a.m., that's going to bed early for me.
Well, you got me beat. I'm like 11, 12 on the weekends, maybe.
Wow.
Yeah.
What are you, old?
Yes.
Oh.
I am indeed. How was Boston?
It was so warm.
What?
So I bought new thermal underwear because I couldn't find both pieces of the one set that I have for emergencies. I don't know. I live in Southern California. Don't usually need them. But so I bought this. They're not special, but they're like soft on the inside and then like silky on the outside.
Oh.
And they're form fitting or whatever. I was so excited to use them. I brought my big puffy jacket, sweaters. I brought the whole layered thing thinking it was going to be super cold. But it was like one day we went out hiking. It was 68 degrees while we were hiking.
Oh my gosh.
In the middle of January in New England. The next day it got up to 72.
You're kidding.
No. Everyone was out walking. And then I asked my friend Kelly about it, the one that I was visiting, and she said that she was feeling uneasy about it. And she goes, I don't know why I'm feeling uneasy. And I said, yes, you do. It's because global...
Whamming.
Yeah. Climate change is making us uneasy. Like, sure, you're getting a summer day in the middle of winter in New England, but that's not a good thing necessarily.
Our bodies react to it. Like, this isn't normal.
This is not wrong. Right. But normally everybody's really grouchy there. Like, you go to the store, everybody's grouchy. You go out to a bar, everybody's grouchy. But everyone was like it was Christmas morning.
Just stoked to be
so
out
happy,
the
out walking their dogs. Yeah, it was nice. But it was a good visit.
Oh, good.
How are you?
I'm okay.
You're okay. What are we talking about today?
We're talking about the 100th monkey effect.
So I've never heard of this until you mentioned it?
I hadn't heard of it either until Paul mentioned it to me one day. And I, here's the story. I signed up for a welding class.
You did? Finally!
I did. Yes, I did it like a couple months ago. And I signed up our whole family for it.
No way!
For a taster class. And so you sent me a link to the website, Molten Metal Works. Mm-hmm. Which is in Glendale. And the first time I looked at it, it was... It was a long time ago. Well, maybe a year ago.
Maybe,
or so,
yeah.
Within the past year. And the first time I looked at it, it was fairly bare bones. Like, you know, kind of cut and dry. Like, we can teach you how to do these specific, I think they had three different kinds of welding classes, or maybe two.
Right.
And then when I signed up for the classes, the website had expanded a little bit, and I was like, oh, this is awesome. So they have these other classes to take and everything. I signed up, and the holidays happened, which, you know, totally derailed everything. Didn't think about it much. And then I got the confirmation, logged onto the website again, and it had exploded. I mean, so many classes, just sculpture, moving sculpture, mobiles, furniture making, like,
holy cow.
It's a welding studio deluxe. And so I mentioned it to Paul. I'm like, this is crazy. Like, I thought that I was the only one who was interested in welding. And he said, oh, no, you're probably the 100th monkey. And I went, what? I never heard of that before. And so he didn't share much information about it with me because he knows I'm going to start digging around.
Right, right.
And I did. And it's kind of an interesting concept, akin to like the tipping point and that right. kind of stuff. So I thought it'd just be kind of fun to talk about.
So the kids today, I took them to the grocery store. I say kids, it's my 19-year-old daughter and her boyfriend.
They'll always be your kids.
Yeah. And he asked me, like, what is the podcast about tonight? And I said, the 100th monkey. And Ella goes, oh, remember that thing I was telling you about the other day?
Oh, yeah.
It was like a perfect example of that. Like it's like in the air, this like,
yes.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. I'd never even heard the term.
Right.
But Ella knows all about it. Explain the potatoes, the sand, the washing, the whole island on the, and I'm like, what?
Isn't it weird? And that happens. That happens. And it's always weird when it happens. And I don't know if there is a proper explanation for it, like science, but.
Well, let's take a break. When we get back, you can tell us all about it.
Okay.
Okay. Asleep behind those eyes. Uh-oh. Ziggy likes it.
I know.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
He just wants to smell my breath. Probably pretty bad. Okay, so the 100th monkey effect.
Yes, ma'am.
The idea, this is kind of the general idea, that social change or new behaviors or ideas happen in a spontaneous leap of consciousness when critical mass is achieved.
Right.
So that there's no physical transference. There's nothing that you can observe, but that like this idea or behavior enters our collective consciousness and then travels.
Right.
So this is the hoobity doobity.
Boobity.
Boobity.
Got
piece it. Of it. Which is kind of interesting, but there's no science behind it whatsoever.
Right.
So there was a study of macaw monkeys on Kojima Island in 1952, and they noticed that one young female monkey was eating sweet potatoes. The humans were giving them these sweet potatoes. And they just dump them on the sand. So one of the youngsters learned to wash the sweet potatoes in the ocean or in a nearby stream before eating them
mm-hmm.
to get all the sand and stuff off. And then her playmates started to do it, and it kind of spread among the youngsters. And then her mother started to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then more monkeys started to do it. And this went on for years. And it wasn't, you know, a super fast process. It didn't happen in a matter of days. It was over the course of years. sorry, I've got the throat thing too a little bit. And then they noticed that monkeys on other islands and the mainland started to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they developed this theory that there was a 100th monkey. That once the 100th monkey started to do it, there was a tipping point. And in that tipping point, all of the monkeys suddenly knew to do it. Even the ones that had not witnessed it happening,
right,
who lived on other islands or on the mainland, that there was some kind of telepathic transference of this.
Now, was this
potato washing
scientifically observed, or was this more of like an urban myth kind of a thing?
It was a study by scientists, I'm using air quotes, and it was a very poorly done study.
Oh, okay.
There was some documentation, but not, you know, it was not.
There was no control group. There was no, yeah, okay.
No, there. It wasn't like they were counting, truly counting them.
Right.
So there's a lot of conflicting evidence, again, air quotes, about this study.
Mm-hmm.
But it does kind of fall into the category of urban legends and, you know, it's out there with Bigfoot and zombies and conspiracy.
So why did you want to learn more about it? Why did it appeal to you, that the idea of that?
Well, I thought it was interesting, just the idea of how behaviors ripple through society.
Yeah.
In general, and how, I mean, there's a lot of social, it permeates our society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously we're social creatures and we learn from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And how does that happen? And what are the consequences of
right.
those? And what are we learning? You know, we can learn good things and we can learn bad things.
Right.
So Ken Keyes wrote a book, The 100th Monkey, which was a parable to illustrate the potential for social change to avoid a nuclear holocaust.
Mm.
And this was back in the 60s, and it's kind of a cult classic. And I read part of it, and it's, you know.
It's from the 60s?
It's from the 60s. So, but interesting stuff, you know, just his idea. And his idea was that we can impart social change on a positive level.
Mm-hmm.
If we do certain things and if we behave certain ways and if our vibrations are high.
Got it.
So remember when Pentecost was here and she was talking about keeping her vibrations high.
Yes.
That's kind of where he was going with this, was like.
So I imagine like new age type of organizations would glob onto an idea like this. Like if you spread your positivity,
right,
you affect however many people, blah blah blah.
Just keeping your vibrations high, being kind to people. And
so his book was specifically targeted at the problem of nuclear war.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was. And he dedicated the book to the dinosaurs.
Oh, that's cute.
And it was, you know, just this idea that we could be wiped out in an instant.
Yeah.
In a war where people are trying to win.
Right.
Everyone loses.
Yeah.
So that's another concept I think is resonates in modern times.
Right.
So yeah, I just thought it was kind of an interesting idea to think about,
mm-hmm.
especially now that we live in an age of fake news.
Right.
Where I found myself not long ago, I was researching a story I had heard, a political story, and I hit a point where I was like, it was kind of a panicky moment, and I thought, how do I know any of this is real?
Oh, yeah.
And I had to kind of bring myself back down to earth with it. But that panicky feeling, I could see how that would inspire somebody to be distrustful of everything, all
right.
of the news.
Or believe in a conspiracy because...
Right.
If everything, if nothing's believable, everything's believable.
So this this does also speak to conspiracy theorists and stuff. Yeah. And I did a little research on that today, which was interesting. You know, the flat earthers and how these ideas spread.
Yeah, that one spread so fast, I feel like.
Yeah. And it's so multifaceted. I mean, we could probably dig around in this forever,
right?
You know, and read all kinds of information about different theories in sociology about how information spreads and or doesn't spread.
So, for you personally, do you think that there is a sort of unspoken contactless spread of behavior? I mean, do you believe that initial report of the monkeys on a different island who hadn't seen the other monkeys? What is your feeling about that?
I believe that it could happen, but I don't think that it's some kind of telepathic communication that happens.
Because you and I have been talking a lot about, like, there's so much stuff we don't know. There's some, you know, there's,
right,
you know, fields of energy we can't see, we don't hear, who knows what's happening. Yeah.
Well, that's, yeah. I mean, maybe on some level.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that there's a lot that I don't know.
Right.
But I also do know that we pick up things in the real world in a concrete way that we're not aware of.
Right.
So, you know, who knows? Maybe a monkey on the mainland saw somebody else washing something. A human, maybe.
Oh, and that, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
There's so many little tiny social cues, nonverbal communications that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And how does that... You know, how does that travel too?
Right.
That can be manipulated in a bazillion different ways. Also, the nonverbal communications,
yeah,
and stuff. So, I mean, who knows, really? But the whole idea of tipping points, this kind of speaks to the idea of tipping point, which,
yeah,
was originally, I believe, a term used by physicists.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's more of a sociological term.
Right, yeah. Malcolm Gladwell had that book a few years ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you read it?
I did. I can't remember it now, but I remember really enjoying it at,
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, he's a good writer.
Yeah.
He's really easy to read. And, but yeah, his idea that connectors, that people are connectors, mavens, or marketers.
This is Malcolm Gladwell?
This is Malcolm Gladwell.
Oh.
So, and this is part of the tipping point. So.
Connectors, mavens.
And
marketers.
Or salesmen.
Oh,
sorry,
okay.
Salesmen. So a new idea pops up, you know, tissue with lotion on it or something, you know.
God bless tissue with lotion on it in,
right,
this past few weeks for me. Thank you. Go ahead. Sorry.
So a connector gets wind of this and they're like, wow, this is really great stuff. And they start sharing it with their friends. And some of their friends are also connectors. And so this idea starts to move through society.
Right.
And then a maven gets a hold of this idea, you know, somebody that lots of people respect their opinion and they're, you know, like, oh, so-and-so's doing it. It's got to be gold.
Right.
And then the salespeople get a hold of it and they're making it an absolute must have.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of his model for how things travel.
And you could place that structure over words or clothing or.
Mm-hmm. Anything.
Behavior, anything. Okay.
Yeah.
Got
and
it.
He, the examples he used in that book were teen suicide rates in Korea,
mm-hmm,
which was horrifying. And I remember reading it back then when my kids were little, and it was excruciating for me to read that part of the book.
Right.
But, you know, one, There was a story of a teenage boy who had a fight with his dad, and he left. He passed his brother on his way out the door or something and asked for a pen, and the brother gave him a pen and found him later. He had hung himself and written the suicide note with the pen. And this story got around. It was big news, and it spread like wildfire. And then all of a sudden, mostly teenage boys living at home who had suffered some kind of altercation with somebody, fight with their girlfriend, parents, etc., they were just killing themselves.
Oh my God.
And it was an epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
America has the highest suicide rate, or we did back then,
right,
teenagers. And they beat us tenfold.
Wow.
It was terrible. It was
during this one wave.
During this one wave.
Oh my God.
And then what else did he talk about? The broken window theory, which is also a really interesting one. One of my favorites.
What is that?
So,
God, how long ago did I read that? 10 years or more?
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Because I remember sitting waiting to pick up kids in my car.
Yeah.
At school, yes. And they're all grown now.
I was at swim lessons.
Yes,
sitting
there you go.
This is before we had smartphones, apparently.
Yeah, we had to read books.
We carried books around with us. Oh, my God. Yeah, I remember having, like, my yarn and crochet needle and a book in the car,
mm-hmm,
at all times for...
I would even bring pillows sometimes so that I could rest.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that was smart. Yeah. God.
Anyway, broken window, what is that?
Broken window theory is, so you're in a neighborhood, there's a broken window and it doesn't get fixed. And you keep seeing this broken window. And then there's another broken window and it doesn't get fixed. And then somebody's got, they stop mowing their lawn. And then it keeps feeding on itself, basically, so that suddenly the environment becomes disorganized and broken and not well kept.
Right.
And it's kind of the idea of, like, why should I if nobody else is?
Oh.
And so on that theory, back in New York, I believe it was in the 80s, there was a massive, New York was a dangerous place. The city was dirty. It was nasty. There were gangs. It was not what it is today. And so what they decided to do, the mayor at the time, and I can't remember who it was.
Was it Ed Koch?
I don't remember.
Oh.
Could have been.
Maybe.
Certainly wasn't, you know.
Giuliani?
Giuliani. Where's the fart piano? I turned it off.
Get that fart
Giuliano.
Piano on. Giuliano? Giuliani.
Giuliani. Giulianio. So the subways were terrible. They were in bad shape. There was graffiti all over them. They were dirty. So what they would do every night is they would bring in the the subway cars that had graffiti on them, and they'd paint over the graffiti every single night. Every night, tons of paint, tons of man hours. But what happened was the graffiti stopped happening because why?
Right.
It just, there was no point to it. So they aggressively started to clean the city. They cleaned the sidewalks. There was just an army of people maintaining the space. They fixed things. They made sure the subways were clean. The subway cars were clean. There were tons of cops in the subway stations. And they arrested people on the spot for the most minor of...
offenses?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So in doing that, they just deterred all of this behavior that was making New York a yucky place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they did it.
Wow.
They unbroke the window. They started fixing things, and they didn't let things get run down.
That reminds me of a documentary I watched recently on PBS about, I believe it was Brooklyn, back in the 60s and 70s. there was a rash, or maybe it was the 70s and early in 80s. There was a rash of fires.
Oh.
Was it Brooklyn? I think it was Brooklyn. It was one of the boroughs. Fire. Every block had fires. Buildings were just going up in flames. And it was like this endless firestorm.
Wow.
Buildings just burning. What it was is that they were all dilapidated, old. Nobody's taking care of them. Mm-hmm. And nobody wanted to invest in that neighborhood. At some point, there was a woman who had decided to take care of kids after school. And she realized that they had no confidence in their neighborhood, their community. They were afraid. Mm-hmm. It was dirty. They couldn't go outside and play, whatever. And so her and a few other people, they started like wanting to fix up buildings that were just basically abandoned by the owners.
Wow.
And the city. So there were these groups of community members that sprung up. In the first one, they rehabbed a whole building and they basically squatted like, we fixed this building, it's ours now. And they moved people in. That spread from there to other neighborhoods where the kids were depressed. It was unsafe. It was not clean. It was trashy. There were fires, whatever.
Right.
And so these groups, these co-op groups started popping up all over the city.
Wow.
And it started from this one person.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Were the kids involved?
Yeah, they involved everybody. And it turned into more than just them rehabbing a thing. It turned into jobs, because then people would hire the
skills.
They would hire the people with skills. Yeah.
Yeah.
It would turn into, you know, now we need people selling food down here. I mean, it just revitalized everything. And it
right.
started with one group of people going, well, if they don't care about us anymore, let's do it ourselves.
We can take care of it ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the benefits to that are just enormous, like across the board.
Building community, the main one, I would think.
Yeah, you connect with your neighbors, you connect with your environment, your physical space,
mm-hmm.
and there's pride in workmanship, and there's a new place to live that's nice. And
right.
Yeah, that's cool. That's one of those really cool mm-hmm. stories. Love that kind of stuff.
But I had never heard of these like fires in New York in the 70s and 80s. But basically the city was just sort of left on its own. Like nobody cared.
Like whatever.
Yeah.
There was a lot of corruption going on back then too. So the money was probably not there. And
right.
Corruption. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I know,
Ziggy
right?
hates corruption too.
I do hate corruption as well, Ziggy. So there were some other ideas I rabbit-holed with.
Yay.
Information cascade, which is similar to herd behavior, but very distinct. It's when people make the same decision in a sequential fashion.
Like, do you have an example?
So, like, say you're in the grocery store and the person in front of you decides to donate to whatever cause they're trying to get you to donate to.
Yeah.
Right. And you see that and you're like, oh, I'll do that too.
Oh.
And the person behind you, oh, I'll do that too. So it's, you know, it's kind of behavior that's modeled and that can be good or bad.
Yep.
Herd behavior.
Can be bad.
Yes, indeed. Individuals in a group acting collectively without centralized direction. Riots, supporting certain events, religious gatherings, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was reading about herd behavior, I thought of teenagers.
Oh, yeah.
Paul just gave me a new pair of red Converse.
They're really nice.
And when he gave them to me, I was like, oh, my gosh. It's just like the guys in high school. All the heavy metal guys
had
red
the same
Converse.
Yeah.
And
all the surfer guys had
Vans. Right?
And all the punk rock girls had Doc Martens.
Yeah. So just that herd mentality, you know, tribalism, being part of something because of what you're wearing, but nobody's telling you to do it.
Oh,
there's no central figure that's saying that you must do it this way. So, you know, teenagers can herd because they're also kind of anarchists, you know, they want to buck authority at any given point. So if you tell them to do something, they're not going to want to do it. But if everybody else is doing it, they're going to want to do it.
Right.
People are so fascinating. The Woozle effect.
What the heck?
Okay, so most of us know the word woozle from Winnie the Pooh stories. They were hunting a woozle once.
Oh, I didn't
In
remember
one of the
that.
Stories, I think it's Piglet and Pooh are hunting a woozle, and they see the footprints in the snow, and they start following it. And then they're following it and following it, and all of a sudden they realize they're following their own footsteps.
Oh my God.
Anyway, the word woozle was coined way before Winnie the Pooh, which I thought was interesting, in relation to social constructs.
Oh, it started out as a social word?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then it ended up in Winnie the Pooh.
Explain to me what it is.
It describes a pattern of bias seen within social sciences and which is identified as leading to multiple errors in individual and public perception, academia, policymaking, and government.
Mm-hmm.
So,
like the SAT test being geared towards white students, that sort of thing?
Right. So saying that this is what's happening and then making it happen. That's how I understand it.
Oh,
so there are footprints in the snow. Let's follow them. There must be somebody, you know, instead of thinking, where did they come from?
Right.
Go ahead. So it's like making a decision that something will be a certain way without the proof of it, without any science behind it.
So like religion?
And then... Fake news.
Oh.
That's where I was going with it. And I might be wrong because I didn't totally read the pages and pages about it. But I don't like this news. It's fake.
Oh.
And I'm going to tell everybody it's fake. And because of herd mentality.
Suddenly it's fake.
Or actually not herd mentality, because there is an authority dictating the idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to believe that person because I identify with that person, and that must be fake news.
Oh my God.
So we're seeing a lot of this kind of stuff happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
In lots and lots of different ways. I mean, lots of different constructs. I couldn't even wrap my head around it. I couldn't untease all the different ways we are being manipulated.
Right.
As citizens and human beings.
Yeah.
I listened to a part of Trump's speech. It was about the bombing.
You heard it with your own ears?
His speech?
Or did you read it with your own eyes?
I heard it and I read it.
Okay.
And it was an excerpt of his speech. And he was talking about the oil. And I didn't write the quote down. But it was, the manipulation was so subtle. I don't even know if he was aware of it. It might just be the way he rolls, just the way he is.
He is a narcissist. That's what they do.
He took credit for the actions that led to the oil that we now have. So in the past, presidents would lump themselves in with everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
We have fought long and hard for this. Trump routinely takes credit for any winning he perceives.
Even if he had nothing to do with it.
Even if he had nothing to do with it. And then the benefits... We are included in the benefits of what he has done. So he always has authority.
Right.
And he's always the generous guy who's sharing the spoils of his hard work with us.
Like donating his presidential salary?
Right. To what, his charity?
That he's not allowed to run because he No, last time he gave it to drugs.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
He just gave it to drugs.
Just gave it to drugs.
So what do you think? Is this that old problem of like being marketed to and realizing you're being marketed to? Is this like seeing the wave of fake newsism coming at you and being able to withstand it or not? Are you afraid that you're being manipulated? Because I know I am.
I have moments where I'm afraid I'm being manipulated. And then I have moments where I can find myself,
right,
so to speak. And I have more of those moments the farther away from the news I am.
Yes.
So I wondered out loud on Twitter the other night, when are people going to just stop? Will there be a tipping point with the media where people are just like, I'm done with this shit. I can't take it anymore.
Right.
I was ready the other night to delete every social media account I had. I just didn't want it anymore. I got rid of Facebook anymore.
And I'm happy.
Will there come a point when people are just like, I'm done. I'm done with all of the news,
mm-hmm,
all of the social media.
Mm-hmm.
And they go like they did in Hong Kong. Let's just do WhatsApp and talk to the people we trust.
Right.
Will there be a tipping point? I don't know.
Trump was making the ICE and Border Patrol hold Iranian nationals at borders.
Yeah.
And I saw a thing go out on Twitter warning people of Persian descent, if you're coming through one of the airports of entry, delete WhatsApp on your phone. It's like one of the things that is tipping Border Patrol off that you might be some sort of activist.
That you've got WhatsApp?
Yes.
Oh my
that was
God.
One of the guidelines, like, be careful, use this number, ACLU, delete WhatsApp off your phone.
Wow.
Yep.
Oh my God.
So.
I hope, much like Ken Keyes, that somehow, whether it's in some telepathic hoobity-doobity way, or some concrete measurable way, that we do hit a tipping point,
mm-hmm,
and things change drastically, because this is not working right now.
Mm-mm.
We are being manipulated on all fronts,
mm-hmm,
and not just, you know, it's not just the Republicans and the Russians. It's everybody.
Yeah.
And I'm sick of it.
Mm-hmm.
There was the senator who recently passed away, his daughter released a bunch of information off of his computers about gerrymandering.
Oh, yes. I heard about that. I didn't know that anything had come of it. Did she release all that information?
Yeah, she released a whole bunch of it. And I think she has more she said she was going to release. And I read the article. There was an interview with her. And the interviewer said, so are you doing this because you're a Democrat? And she said, no. I'm doing this because I'm an anarchist. And I was like, oh my God, my head exploded. I was like, I want to be an anarchist. But she said, I have no allegiance to any political party, but I know that what he was doing was wrong.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm releasing all of this information, because it was wrong. And the American people deserve to know that this is happening.
Right.
You know, she took all the politics out of it and said, look at this is wrong. Wake up, fuckers.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Did she say it just like that?
Hello. In my mind, she did. But that was that I read that article not long after Paul threw out the 100th monkey thing at me, too. So I was already in that space of like.
Your wheels are spinning, I can tell.
So what if we did that? What if we just became anarchists?
What would that look like as almost 50-year-old ladies?
Oh, I've been thinking about it.
Have you?
I've got plans.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Yep.
What do they involve?
I'm not going to say anything about gasoline.
What? I wish I knew what was happening right now.
Oh, shut up. I want to blow things up, but not you know, not with gasoline and bombs, but
with ideas.
Yeah. And action and connection and God almighty, enough. Mm-hmm. Enough.
Did you ever watch V for Vendetta? It's one of my favorite movies.
No, I haven't watched it yet.
I think you should in your state of mind right this moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Somebody asks him why blowing up a building matters, and his answer, I think, would be good for you right now.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Got something new to watch.
It's excellent. I love that movie.
Put it in the queue.
All right. Should we wrap it up?
Yeah, let's wrap it up, yo.
With some fart songs?
Oh, yes. Fart songs.
Dedicated to the monkeys on Kojima.
Uh-oh, I forgot. Never mind.
You haven't played the fart piano in a long time.
I haven't.
You need to practice your fart time. We were in my house before we came out to the studio, and Kim had the fart piano in her bag, and when she stood up, it made a fart noise, and I didn't know that she had the fart piano in her bag. And then she went, "Oops, sorry." And it reminded me of her dad when I used to live with him a long time ago, because he'd get up to walk somewhere in the house and he'd fart. And then he'd go, "Whoops." So I called it a Mr. Stevenson. Oh. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
We'll see you next time. Or we won't see you, really.
Tip some points, man.
Curio Podcast is a Porch Swing production. Big thanks to all of our contributors and special guests. For more info, please visit Twitter at Podcast Curio, Curio Podcast on Facebook, and CurioPodcast.org. And remember, Curio Podcast loves you.
Yeah!